We're gonna reveal it from the servers to the cloud. We're breaking it down, showing you how.
Tech trends, we're on the edge. Pulse check, that's what we pledge. Keeping you updated, never miss a beat in the IT industry. We can't be beat. Analytics, data's the key. Unlocking insights, setting you free. Cybersecurity.
I don't see it. Hold on a second.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of Pulse Check. We got a super cool episode lined up for you guys today. Thank you to everybody on our first, inaugural episode of Pulse Check. You guys had some great feedback, comments, and to everybody that watched, thank you very much. So we're going to keep things going with this episode. We have actually a special guest joining us today, a mentor to most of us here, former colleague. And I'll bring him on to talk a little bit about what's it like being a sales engineer and kind of our backgrounds and history in the industry. So with that, I'd like to welcome Don DiPonte to our stream.
Hey, guys.
Yes, sir.
What's going on, my friend?
Welcome in.
Missed y'all so much.
I know. It's been too long. Yeah, for a real long time. For the folks that are not aware of Mr. DiPonte, do you want to kind of give us a little background on yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I am a solutions engineer now, which is the same as being a sales engineer in other places. I've been doing that for, your thunder is kind of scary. I've been doing that for...
Don't mind the thunder in the background.
Dennis is bringing the lightning. I've been doing it for like 6 years plus at this point. Been pretty awesome. I've been
employed
at lots of good customers.
Mr. DiPonte.
Oh, no. Can you not hear me?
Oh, he's gone.
You're good.
That's you, Steve.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
We got you.
Okay. Yeah, doing it for a few years. Been around the industry for even longer as a consultant. So had the pleasure of running into these individuals on the podcast over the past few years. And yeah, it's just great to connect again.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. I guess what I wanted to kind of do with this episode, just because I think a lot of us come from a different background, right? When you think sales engineers in general, and I don't know if it, I think it might have even been you, Donnie, that kind of like turned me onto this terminology, right? You have either you're a big S or you're a big E or you try to be a big S and E. So everyone kind of comes from a different, technical background, a different sales background. So I thought it might be kind of cool to just give everybody a little insight on how we all got into the industry, how we transitioned to sales and some of the challenges that come along with, or at least I know I had challenges making the transition from kind of that technical, architect role, engineering role into something more, driven from a sales perspective, and just kind of give ourselves a little bit of background there if that works for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. So, I can kick us off since I posed the question, but, for probably 10 years prior to being an SE, I was predominantly a solution architect, right? So in some companies that's technically pre-sales role, depends on kind of where you work, but I was mainly doing a lot of post-sale deployments. So I was kind of brought in after the sale, here's what we scoped out, go and deploy it, build it, whatever. So it wasn't really exposed to that much of the sales side and what goes into actually, closing a deal, showing value, definitely still involved with kind of the end goal, which is ultimately to help the customer with a problem. But the lens that you kind of look at that in is a lot different, right? Especially like when you talk about things like demonstrations and kind of what your focus is. As an SE, you're trying to not only position the product that you're selling, but doing it in a way that ultimately is going to solve a problem. And, a lot of times as a engineer background, you either already have a product that you're trying to implement that has already been picked for you, or you're trying to come into an organization and deploy something that, you know, is a thing that we sell, a widget, right? I don't really have a say in what my company sells. I'm just there to go and deploy it. So a lot of my background was kind of in that vein, right? I would go in, deploy NetApp, go in, deploy, a VMware environment, and the choices of the tools that we could use or influence were kind of already done. So when I kind of came over into kind of sales engineering, that was one of the things I think I enjoyed the most about it, is actually being able to not be pigeonholed into, you know, go make it work, we already sold it, to being now more of that consultative approach where, hey, you know, let's take a step back, see what we're actually trying to build and solution for, and then find the right, round peg in a square hole, right? We don't want to do that, right? So trying to find the right solution for the problem. And with that, trying to take myself from a big E into a medium S, I guess, right? Trying to move some of my technical skills over to the sales side and translate that is a whole challenge in of itself. So trying to not only be able to speak to technical parties, but also being able to kind of up-level conversations to, you know, the C-level folks and the folks that care a little bit differently about different solutions and problems, they look at it from an entirely different lens. And I'd say that's kind of been the biggest, struggle that I had. But I don't know if anybody got comments on that or not, but kind of where I fit in.
Yeah, I think similar to that, and I don't know if I'm jumping in on anybody. I was going to kind of go into it, which kind of ties into some of the stuff you were talking about as well. But yeah, for me, it was 20 some odd years, system administration, managing a NOC, just more in the day-to-day operations side of the house, working at a data center, rack and stack and cable, and working with the network team, the dev team, DBAs, backups, the whole bit. You know, I got my hands into everything for many years. It was supposed to be a couple of years, kind of like a boot camp kind of thing, figure it out. 20 years later, I'm kind of wondering why I was there for so long. And I was lucky enough to interview with, hopefully I'm pointing to the right side on my camera. I'm not this guy, Daniel here. I talked to him and he's like, so do you know this product? I was like, actually, I've been using it for multiple years. And he goes, oh, so you can talk to it and maybe sell it. I kind of do that now. I was like, oh. So it was a transition of going from hand in every single pot, every single thing going on, to you are focusing on understanding what those pots do and what they're cooking, but you're only going to focus on this one thing. And you are going to be, it would be a sales engineer role for that. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. It took a lot of, and we'll talk about this probably a little bit later, going through imposter syndrome to no end to really figure out what I was doing. And I'm gonna embarrass Dondi for a moment. Okay. So where I really learned, this speaks to your point, Steve, about personas, about the different people you're speaking to. I really didn't get that so much. Most of the people I talked to were my kind of people, and my nerds, the people I always worked with, right?
The knobs guys.
The Linux guys. All those guys.
The nerd knob people.
100%. And I went to this one meeting with Dondi, with a room full of, and you'll probably remember this, is full of maybe a dozen to 15 people. And you had in one corner a Linux administrator who we were talking about full-on Linux administrator. You had another corner, you had more of a director, senior level kind of guy. And then you had the one guy who used a product that's been around for 20 years and he's never leaving it. So you had these kind of people all around us. And I was more sitting back and trying to really get my legs and see what's going on. And Dondi talks to the Linux guy. He's like, yeah, man, I totally get it. We can do the things for the things. And he's talking this guy's language. He's talking the way he talks. And the director guy speaks up. He goes, absolutely, we can meet your business needs. We can do this, do that. And then he talks to the other guy who's using the old tool. He goes, I totally get it. It does that very well. We can also do that in this particular way. It was learning not only the personas, but to be able to speak their language at the sales engineer level, which I had never seen before. And it was tremendous. And it really set my focus on not landing that account. But that's another whole story.
But the value you gain from not winning
the
that
value
account is priceless.
That's right. I've lost many an account doing that same thing. But It's but I did learn a lot about it, and I'm very appreciative of that. But yeah, so long story again, longer, like we said earlier, I'm definitely a little less bigger E working on the desk side, but yeah, I would never go back to the just the engineering out of the house again. This is actually quite enjoyable to bring solutions to people that actually make a change.
Oh, you guys are all so cute about solving problems and making change.
He's like, I'd like the money.
I'm so honest. That's like
the only reason we do.
That's one of the biggest reasons that got me interested in it. But just like everyone else on the call, man, I was just like you guys, I was in the data center on the ops team, specializing in Windows system administration, particularly Active Directory. That was like I was the Active Directory guy for many a years. And one day, you know, I'm fielding calls, you know, recruiters call you once upon a time. And somebody said, hey, you want to be a consultant, technical consultant. And at the time, at the role I was in, I was working with a bunch of consultants, and I kind of heard through the grapevine of how much money they were making. And I was like, man, I need to get into consulting. Like, I can't. And we always had these conversations where I asked, how do you get into consulting? And so on and so forth. And when they said technical consultant, I'm like, oh, this sounds perfect, right? I think I can do whatever the things are. Because to tell the truth, if someone said sales engineer to me, I'd be like, oh, no way. I'm not going to sales. That's not for me. But the fact that they, you know, they framed it as a technical consultant, I was all ears and open to the opportunity. And that's how I got into sales engineering. Lo and behold, 90 days in, I'm like, wait, I got to do a demo. Somebody has to. I'm like,
I gotta talk to people?
What is going on? I was going to be the AD specialist, right? But I learned so much. I learned to love the field and the role because you're like a Swiss Army knife, right? And that was my thing. I remember one of my mentors always says, hey, you're going to become a ninja. And I'm a nerd, so I'm like, yeah, technical ninja, right? I get to learn so many things, right? And, you know, as an SE, you are that Swiss Army knife. You learn so many things, and I love it. And we do get paid like technical consultants. Well, so
that is the nice part about it.
This is a great part about it.
Yeah, I think I don't know, because you know, we've talked about this before. I've talked with some of you about this before, but I don't think everybody. So my first foray in being an SE was an accident. I was a consultant. So forever ago, long time, many moons, right? I was a consultant. I worked in telco. Mostly with switches like Broadworks switches and Metaswitch switches for carriers. That was what I did. That was in a data center, at a data center, carried a pair of shears in my backpack, you know, like that guy. I can go like do some Amphenol in a heartbeat, like, and Amphenol's a cable, by the way. It's wiring for the uninformed, right? But that was the day-to-day. And we had customers, and we had a customer, and they had a support agreement, right? So they were like, we pay you X dollars, you know, for hours, and we give you X hours a month. We use it for whatever we want to. We own you. And so they had a person who left their company who was their only sales engineer. And they already had an agreement with us, and I had worked with them on some other stuff. And they were like, hey, you know this product that is our back end, right? And I was like, yeah. Can we just pay you to do his job? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, I know the product. So my first call as an SE, embarrassing. Because I didn't know. Like, I did a little bit of a demo, but as a vendor of a product, not as a sales engineer working with an account person. And the guy started on the other end, started asking some questions and saying some stuff, and I disagreed with him. And somewhere along the line, I remember shouting, I was like, bro, you're wrong. Like, come at me, bro. Like, what is this? Like, I'm so out of pocket. But they didn't end our support agreement. They were like, okay, that was rough, but we think that you can do better. And they kept me doing it. They were desperate and they were actively trying to hire like a real person, but they didn't get rid of me. And I was like, oh, this is fun. I get to like be technical, but I don't have to be. I can just like riff on stuff and people, and like we have a good time. And so that set the tone for me moving into sales engineering and finding I actually really liked it. I love the technical aspect. I can still do lace cabling like the old telco guys with the ladder racks to go back and forth. You know, I'll teach my kid how to do that one day. He'll be the only one in grade school. Imagine. But yeah. It was the thing where I was like, I love this blend of being technical, but also being a person and trying to find the other person and get them to come down and just be a person with you for a little bit. That I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed. I mean, there's that aspect of it. And then there's also like, one of the other, I guess, drivers on my end from making that transition was I just got tired of being on call and having to like always carry my laptop around. And, you know, if I fell over and died tomorrow, they'd just find somebody else to come take my spot. And it was one of those like burnout things where it was like I was ready for a change.
That's funny. I have a similar story.
Wait, you don't carry your laptop around with you everywhere you go just in case you have a call?
Yeah. No, definitely.
Am I the only one still doing that?
I unplug my modem at night when I go to sleep.
That's what the kid does. Someone does. Yeah.
Somebody does. Someone. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. I'll never forget. There's years ago when I was on call. I remember going to the club with my friends and having my laptop in the car parked outside. And I remember my phone going off because an alert came in. And I'm sprinting out the club, running to the car, you know, which are using your phone as a hotspot, trying to solve some tickets because a site went down. And I remember, right. Well, I think we used to get like $40 a night. It was horrible. I was like, this is not life.
Yeah. Not even Uber Eats.
Was it Uber Eats?
No, delivery fees.
Yeah.
So in that transition that you guys all had, was there a bit of like technical detox? But I know, Donnie, you still like to do all the cabling. You were still kind of balancing both worlds when you were doing it. I know when I made the cut over, I went from 24/7 managing a NOC, having done it for so long, it's become my norm, to becoming a 9 to 5 or 8 to 5. I get up a little early, SE, and kind of like 5 o'clock rolls around. I'm like, I should be doing something. Something is wrong. I need to be fixing something. It took probably a good 4 months or so to call it imposter syndrome, call it whatever, but to kind of a technical detox to kind of go, this is the life now. This is actually a, no offense to sys administrators, network administrators, and everybody out there until today working the role, a real job of kind of balance of life and, you know, and work. And I hadn't had that kind of ever right out of college. So that was a big, very welcome, long drawn out change for me. I'm not sure if anybody else went through any of that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I always attribute it to kind of like, you know, the saying everyone's like, you should always be a waiter once in your life, right? Like if you're going to be in sales engineering, I feel like you should at least be in some capacity in that role for a brief period of time so you understand the pains that those people go through. Because I think ultimately, like, I think that's what makes me a decent SE is the ability to connect on that level, because I've been there and I understand, like, I know this could help you and it could totally make your life more bearable, because being a systems engineer is not a trivial thing. Oftentimes you're, you know, the lone admin in a company, and everyone, I mean, that's how I was, right? You guys know what I like to, you know, do all sorts of crazy stuff at work. But like I would do that as my day job, and then it would come the time where nobody could support it because Steve wasn't there. And it became this thing where now every 5 seconds I was on the hook for something, to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm just not going to do that anymore because I don't want to have to support it. But now as an SE, it's actually nice because, to your point, Dennis, like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock rolls around, I can work on stuff that I actually like enjoy if I wanted to. And I can still keep that kind of technical edge that I have, but it's not a forced requirement, if that makes sense. You know, totally. So I kind of now have the freedom to still go off in those paths and stay relevant in the technical, you know, scheme of things, but I'm not like at the mercy of a phone call or a pager or anything like that.
I think I found early as an SE, and I had a fellow that sat next to me. I won't name drop him, but if he's out there, he may be listening. Who knows? But I had a fellow who sat next to me who really liked bicycling and whatnot. And he listened to a bunch of my calls early on, and he was like, you really have to find some balance in what you're doing and what you're saying. Because, you know, coming from being a consultant, being like the technical person, it is always easy to overshare. I can tell you all the things, you know, I can tell you how it works. I can tell you why it works. I'll tell you when you do it and get like super jazzed and excited. And sometimes you have a person on the other side that is also excited. And other times they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. No. Uh-huh. Yeah. And like you're losing them because you're passionate because you don't get to share as much as you used to be that technical go-to person, but it doesn't call for it anymore. And so like kind of find that balance between, I want to share everything in the world with you, and I just need to tell you the things that you want that like are important to you, and what is important to you isn't, or important to me isn't important to you right now.
And I think that right there is the delineation. That's the line in the sand to becoming a good sales engineer. The ability to discern, hey, what do people want to hear? And that's the trick. That's the trick. Sometimes it's hard. A lot of times it's hard, actually. But, you know, but once you figure that out, you know, that's what makes a good sales engineer. So with that being said, I'm curious, man, what do you guys feel like are some of the essential skills, and are there any certifications for folks to transition into this SE life?
Skills and certifications. This is maybe less certifications and more skills is communication. So one thing a lot of us working in the engineering field and doing what we've done, a lot of engineers, boy, I'm going to get myself maybe in trouble, aren't the best communicators. All right. They can speak the engineering language very, very well. But when you're speaking to somebody who might be a director or going up the chain a little bit into the executive level, you have to be able to speak a different language. And the one thing I would say people should do, especially engineers who maybe see more monitor than window, talk to people.
Wait, that was deep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it's a little still close to
in
home.
My offense,
I
have a window right next to my monitor, so
yeah. So I cheat, but I would definitely say talk to people. I mean, I'm not just talking about, you know, your person in the desk next to you. Communicate. Hello to somebody in a store, at a cashier. Just communicate. Get used to just being comfortable with talking. Because a lot of the people I've worked with over the years say, maybe I want to be an SE. I was like, maybe you should talk to people. I think it's a great idea because it's not for some people a natural skill. They don't communicate well. Just talk and just get comfortable communicating.
I think that's so true.
And I think that goes for a lot of things, not even just sales engineering, right? Just in
life.
In life in general, good communication skills goes a long way.
A long way.
It's hard talking to people sometimes, though. Like, I get that. You spend time coding, you spend time in a data center. You know who's there with you? Nobody.
Nobody.
It's you, Spotify, you and yourself. It's
console kid. Yeah.
But you know what? When I was in the data center, that was probably some of the most depressing times of my life. Because anybody who knows me, I really enjoy like relationships and talking to people. So mm-hmm. when I was in the data center, that's probably why I took that call to be a technical consultant. Because I was like, hey, man, this it's cold in here and I ain't talked to somebody in 6 days. Right. So. But I think about like, you know, my past, and some of the best times was when I was on the help desk. Actually walking mm-hmm. to someone's desk and actually talking to them about the problem, fixing the problem, and being the hero, right? So my favorite things about being an SE, solving problems, making people happy, right? So, and I feel like being an SE is that. plus more because you're doing it on such a bigger scale.
Yeah. I feel like there's
a quality that oftentimes gets overlooked, even for people who are SE. But when you master emotional intelligence, like that's a game changer. So communication, yes, you just have to be willing to open your mouth and say some words. But when you can master emotional intelligence, where like you are feeding off of the room and like all those little like there's a better word than microaggressions, but you know what I mean, those like small little like shifts in body movement as someone saying something or their tone changes or whatever, like when you understand what that is, I think that takes your interactions with customers to a completely different level, because then you start pivoting and shifting based on those minute things that maybe others in the room don't notice, but that's how you turn opposers into champions. Right? Because they're like, oh, you hear me. You see me. I didn't even say anything, but you know. Like, I love that. Like, that's a skill that I'm still working on, right? But I think that is next level. Not just, like, I'm an SE, but, like, I'm a really, really good SE.
Yeah. No.
How do we build up that emotional intelligence? Build up that EQ.
ChatGPT 4.0 says...
It will give you a 7-day plan emojis on how to build it out.
I don't know. I feel like one of the things that I struggled with, even trying to remember what my point was going to be, but one of the things I always struggled with when I first started was, to that point, it's like you come in to a product or whatever, you're going to be a sales engineer, right? Whether it's a VAR or GSI. You're supposed to be kind of the person of this person that has all this information on what's the best practice, what should I be doing, right? It's almost to the point of like an imposter syndrome where you go into a new job or a new role. And when I started, it was very much prevalent where it's like I thought I was good from a technical aspect, and I was like, oh, I figured this product out and no problem. But then it's not so much about knowing the technical side, right? It's great because I can tell you exactly how to configure it, but nobody's going to buy it unless I can get a seat in front of them to tell them why it's going to save them money or it's going to solve some problem. And that was one of the things I think I struggled with when I first started, was trying to differentiate, because there are people that don't care about that and do care about the technical bits and bobs. But being able to, when you walk into a room or come into a meeting, figure out as quickly as possible who those people are. So to Dennis's point, when you guys went to that on-site and, you know, we were pivoting between, you know, different personalities and different ways of speaking to people. That's a skill, I think, like it's a very good skill to have as a SE, but even just to Kirk's point, like, communication goes a long way in life, and being able to kind of understand and hone that skill, I think transfers outside of the SE org. But it's something that I think a lot of people struggle with coming in from a sales org or going into a sales engineering role, is being able to have that kind of audible readiness to quickly pivot based on, you know, what somebody throws at you or who enters or exits the room. That's where, you know, you prove your worth.
Well, yeah. Said.
No, I completely agree. As a matter of fact, when I first started where I am now, I watched, I can't tell you how many demos, just of other people doing demos within the company, or I tried to sit in on demos. I know, Kirk, I sat in on yours. And you actually saved me from one, but that's another whole story for another time. But we did all those things, and it just hearing how different people talk to different personalities or personas or whatever was wild to see. And so just observing people talking is very helpful as well. So I would definitely, again, just keep talking to people. Yeah. And the other thing I'll throw out there real quick is something that was recommended to probably all of us here at some point, just two books, and actually a third book, was the Great Demo, I think is a fantastic book. to give a good read to. Stories That Stick is always a good one. And one I just finished recently that was recommended by somebody we work with was The Phoenix Project. It's, I don't know if anybody's read it. It's a phenomenal book, but it's a very IT-focused book that talks about a lot of stuff that you guys have done. It's like the office space movie of books, right? It's like more of a documentary than it is anything else. But it talks about learning and understanding the different departments and different people, different personas. And it's a wild, wild read. I'd include that as well. But definitely the first two, Great Demo and Stories That Stick, are very good books.
Do they have audio books of that? Because I don't read
it. I have no idea. I don't. Yes.
I think that was required reading at my last SE job very early on. My manager was like, you have to read this. Here you go. He was like, go expense it. I was like, okay. But so best thing in there that I absolutely love is do the last thing first.
Yep,
like
100%.
Start with that. Start with the finished result. And that takes you so far in the conversation. The thing I love about that is when you do that, the timing of the actual demo shifts. And although it may shift to a shorter period of time, that's not a bad thing, because you can actually address exactly what your customer is looking for in a much shorter period of time. Get to the point. Is this what you were looking for? Get a yes, and you're off to the races.
Oh yeah,
that's 100% true. I agree. This day, that's the one thing I try to do as fast as possible. And speaking to that, I'll never forget. There was a call where we're doing this demo, and it's like 15, 20 minutes in, I have like this VP on the call. And then I'm asking, you know, I want people to be interactive. I'm like, hey, any questions? He's like, yeah, how can you help me? And I was like, damn it.
I prepared like, for everything.
Right? So I wasted 20 minutes. And then I had to take a step back, ask a few questions, pivot, and then the next 20, 25 minutes was a conversation. And that sticks with me always, because I'm like, that was well into my career as well, right? Yeah. Always, you're never going to be perfect, right? So I that stays at top of mind, because I'm like, darn, got to show people what they want.
Yeah.
Show people what they want. Just going to be a better conversation.
Yeah. I think also one thing that I always used to do that I don't do anymore is like, you set up for like a 90-minute meeting or a 60-minute meeting for a demo, and you go in there, you show them exactly what they want, and they're like, this is great, this is fantastic. If you're at that point, like, there's no need to do the full 90-minute demo. Like, I always just be in there, like, I got to fill out this whole content. You actually do yourself a disservice at that point, because you've already kind of showed them the value, and now you're hopefully not, but most of the time, diluting that by continuing that conversation. So that was one of the big, I think, mistakes I used to make, was I would plan out obviously how I thought the demo would go, just so I had a rough framework. But then once I was like, all right, these guys are definitely, you know, interested, and I know that we can help them with what their problem is, that's it. I mean, there's no point to go and, you know, try and, you know, draw out the demonstration if you've already proven that. So knowing when to like pull the plug is also a thing that you need to kind of feel out as you get comfortable with it.
So, quick question for you all. So we've talked a lot about being an SE, but one thing we haven't touched on is that as an SE, you're rarely working in silo, right? We're always working in tandem with a salesperson, right? Mm-hmm. So we haven't touched on that at all, right? So with that being said, like Steve, you just talked about.
Uh-oh. How much time do we
spicy?
Welcome to the 7-hour podcast.
Yeah. You mentioned how like plan for 60 or 90, you can get it done in like 10, 15.
Yeah.
I know personally I have. When I hit the mark, everyone's excited, they're happy. I'm like, all right, let's talk about next steps.
Flip it on back over. Let's go do that.
A lot of times the sales counterpart says, hey, Kirk, why don't you show this? Let's talk about this. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And I can't look now we can't fight in front of a customer, right? Because that's just gonna look
different. You gotta have your guy move that stuff to Slack or Teams or whatever you're doing. So I can be like, can you show this? No.
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 I think you should. No.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
We're done.
That's true.
There was a different part of my life. Someone told me, when you're having a good conversation with somebody, if you take that conversation and you stretch, you're like, oh man, we let that meeting go on for 2 hours, 2.5. We were just like riffing. It was great. You might have thought it was great, but the only thing that they may remember is that you won't shut up.
Yeah.
Right. You thought it was the best whole thing in the whole wide world, but if you just never stop talking, that may be the takeaway, not the value you showed early on, just that, man, I really don't think I can get on a call with him anymore because I don't have 3 hours.
Yeah.
That's a good point. We actually, work with somebody who said, he always uses the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking? Right. It says he just kind of uses that in his back pocket. Mind you, I don't know if I've ever heard the person stop talking, but still, it's a great acronym to hold on to. I often, because I might ramble, I might go on and on a little bit, but I'll constantly go to that and go, okay, just shut up and let someone else talk. But you're right, it's easy to keep riffing with people. You're thinking, all right, because not only are they buying my product, they're buying me, they're buying the relationship with, I am currently the face of the not really, no, not entirely. You're going to be pushing them away at that point.
Yeah. I think the other thing that also helps, especially when you're an SE, is really kind of the way that you carry yourself in terms of how you respond to questions. Because you can answer a question the same way, but answer it in a way that the customer thinks that either A, you don't know what you're talking about because you're not confident in the response that you give, or B, you give it in a confident manner and they just think you know everything about what you're talking about. And that goes along with like building credibility with the customer, right? Obviously, you hopefully know what you're talking about if you're giving them answers to things. But you need to make sure that the way that you kind of go about explaining it is a way that builds that trust with them. Because over time, right, we're seen as kind of the, you know, trusted advisor in between the AE, right? AE is the car salesman, and we're kind of like the guy in between to like, no, that actually does come with an engine, I promise you. but like, that's the kind of rapport we try to build, because to Kirk's point about skill sets and things, right? You know, networking goes a long way, especially the people that you interact with. I mean, I don't know how many times I've gone from 3 different, orgs to working with the same individual in a different capacity at each one of them. Right. And that's because I actually, you know, I have a good rapport and a, you know, vote of confidence in what I'm doing is going to actually help them. So it's kind of one of those things that, like, I think goes into being a well-rounded SE, is being able to, even if you don't know the answer, either find it or, you know, at least be able to explain it in a way that, you know, exudes a vote of confidence in what you're saying. Because a lot of times I'll be on the phone call with people that are answering questions, and they have the right answer, but they delivered it, and I'm like, I don't know if I would believe that if I was on the other end of the phone. It's a you know, communication skill set, but I think an important one nonetheless.
And your answer went right, Steve? Right.
Yeah, just to confirm.
The other thing I remember hearing, and again, I'm going to credit Dondi. I'm going to see how much I could possibly embarrass him today. It's okay to say no.
Yes.
That was the one thing that I did not get initially. I'm always, if there's something that we don't do and they say, do you do this? I want to say, well, here's how we envision it. And I'll kind of, it won't be the same thing. It's okay to go, no, we actually don't do that. Here's why, but here's how we can help you otherwise. That's okay. Saying no is an okay thing, because 2 weeks down the road, 3 weeks down the road, where you're showing your product in deeper detail and they go, but what about, oh yeah, no, I was just kidding. We don't do that.
I was just kidding.
Right. We can't, right? Saying no is okay and actually preferred. It really clears things up.
It's a credibility builder, right? If you just upfront, no, don't. Now, are there alternatives? Yes, even better sometimes. We don't do it. Here's why. Why do you do that now? Right. Maybe there's some forward thinking, some consulting you can offer on the back end, but that, no, like, they'll remember, okay, this person's not just trying to blow smoke. At least they came right out and said, the answer is no. what else? Where do we go from here? Right? It's not a bad thing. And if that means a customer goes away, you did the right thing.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's funny, something that I've learned, and I'm sure some of you have learned, like, especially Kirk, I'm sure you've seen this a couple times, right? You run into some of the same customers if you go from one organization to another.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're still in the same position of being an SE and seeing some of those same people one time versus another, and you made up some stuff, and they see you again, no. There's no point. You just shut it down right now, because they're not going to believe you. You tried to make up something. You tried to sell them instead of being a consultant, being a trusted advisor.
Yeah. 100%. I agree with that. And it's funny you mentioned that, because now in my current role, you know, I see customers from my past life all the time. All the time. And I'm just happy that I said no in the past, because everything, hey, Kirk, how's it going? And it's like we pick up where we left off, and they're like, all right, well, tell me how this can help. You know my problems already. Same thing from the past. How can y'all fix it? Right. So it's funny. Saying no is very important. I think how you say no is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't just say, nah, we don't do that. Right?
In some cases you can.
No, what are you doing? No, you can't. There's some things. Yeah, you're right though.
You know, I think how you say no is just as important, right? So Yeah.
I think the other I'll get off that conversation in a minute, but I think another thing that I find super important is the company that you work for, or the products or services that you sell, you have to believe in them. And I say that because, right, we ultimately got into this role, except for Kirk, right, for helping people out.
You know,
trying to take the stuff that we enjoy doing as a sysadmin or an architect, and try to be able to do that for multiple people. And if you don't like the tool or the services that you offer, it is very hard, if not impossible, to do a good job in selling it, because ultimately you're lying to yourself and the customers. Because I when I first started as an SE, I worked for a company that sold a product, and the product was not the greatest thing in the world, right? But I sold it. And what I realized over time was, like, I thought I didn't like being a sales engineer. Like, I wake up, I go do the thing, I sell the product, we go do a POV, something doesn't work, you know, and it's like, it was almost like that mindset of, like, burnout, but from a frustration standpoint. You have to stand behind the product that you sell, and ultimately align yourself with things that are going to help you not only help the customer, but ultimately puts you in a position where you're selling something that actually makes a difference. And that's a big takeaway, right? You can be a sales engineer in a number of companies, but if you don't believe in the thing that you're selling, you're going to have a hell of a harder time trying to, you know, make that work from a longevity standpoint.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. No product is going to be
100% perfect.
But you got to find a valid use, a personal valid use case. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know. I've heard an SE or two on a call that I could tell didn't believe.
Yeah.
Right. And it comes across. They're like, yeah, it does this and probably do this. Like, there's no genuine feeling behind it. But I've heard a few others that, like, they're believers. Like, they've been
that Kool-Aid is empty. They drank
it. Yes, all every drop of it. They're like, this is the way. Let me show you.
Yes.
Hey, but it's a positive thing, because, like, some customers will pick up on that and be like, okay, you do really believe in this and you seem smart enough. I'll give you a go.
Right? Yeah,
I agree with that. Belief in the product's important.
Right, because it is transparent, right? People, you see through it. You definitely see through it. And to double down on something that was said earlier, discussing, like, different attributes you need to move forward, is, and that goes right to believing into the product itself, is get your hands in as much as you can, like depending where you are right now, if you're working in a NOC, if you're working as a sys engineer, network engineer, telco, whatever it is, learn about the other products itself, get to know those things, or even just, you don't have to know them inside and out, but how do they communicate? How do they connect? Because when you're talking to people, depending on whatever product it is you're going to be demoing or showing, you're going to need to speak to those people. You're going to need to understand their needs, their wants, and be able to speak to it. And I think, again, not knowing it, kind of, yeah, if I get on a demo and I'm like, yeah, that's the, we monitor the flux capacitor. Absolutely. We collect every metric from it. You'll never lose it. They're going to be like, all right, this guy's full of it, right? So understand, a lot of it is very transparent. People.
Or no, not.
I agree.
Or you end up, they end up with a bill and can't refund. That's crazy.
How do I go back to 1985? I don't understand.
Marty? But yeah, I think, I don't know, Kirk, or I think we're coming up on 45. Do you want to kind of send us off for this episode?
Sure. Why not put me on the spot, man? No, but before we recap really quick, like, subscribe. Gotta support Pulse Check. All right. With that being said, you know, today we talked about, you know, what it takes to be an SE, how we share some stories, how we transitioned into the sales engineering role. Hopefully you guys found that useful. And for some of you folks who are thinking about it, feel free to hit us up on the channel, right? And we'll communicate with you guys if you need any help with that. Thank you so much to our special guest, the man, the myth, the legend.
The legend.
Very important to us all.
Privilege. Honor and a privilege.
You know, but so with that being said, last thing, what is the topic for?
That's a great question. And something that I pose out to everybody else. What do you guys want to hear? Let us
know.
Tune
in next time to see what we're going to be talking about.
Because we don't know now. We have a couple things in mind. Not entirely sure which one we'll go with, but we will certainly let everybody know. If you want to be a guest on this show and you have something you want to talk about, let us know as well. A number of folks have reached out expressing interest. So who knows? There might be another special guest on episode 3. We'll see.
I just want to say thank you guys for putting this together. This is fantastic. I am so happy and proud to be able to have spent time with you all. I'm getting all emotional and sappy. This is out of my way, right? But thank you all so much for putting this on. Thank you for having me. All three of you, fantastic rock stars within sales engineering, solutions engineering, like examples of what good looks like. That's you all.
All trained by Dondi. So thank you.
All trained. Facts.
Facts.
All right, deal.
You are more than welcome. Thank you again, everybody. As Kirk said, like and subscribe. Let us know if you have any feedback, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Deuces. Take it easy.
We're plugged in. Can you feel it? It news. We're going to reveal it from the servers to the cloud. We're